Let's have a look at seventh verse of Psalm 402. Just to focus our attention a bit. And you can lead him or chant your times, you know.
Sat Krishna Naam Charita Kisita Pivetya Pito Patapta Rasanasya Narochikanu Kintvadarad Anudinam Khalu Seva Chushta Svatvikramat Bhavati Takkadamulahantri
Krishna Nama Charita Visita Pyavidya Pito Patapta Rasanasya Narochikanu Kintvadarad Anudinam Kalu Seva Chushta Svatvikramat Bhavati Takkadamulahantri Krishna Nama Charita Visita Pyavidya Pito Patapta Rasanasya Narochikanu Kintvadarad Anudinam Kalu Seva Chushta Svatvikramat Bhavati Takkadamulahantri Krishna Nama Charita Visita Pyavidya Pito Patapta Rasanasya Narochikanu Kintvadarad Anudinam Kalu Seva Chushta Svatvikramat Bhavati Takkadamulahantri
The holy name, character, pastimes and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. So today, I want to start the session by revisiting something that we explored a little bit last week. It was something that was said by Jagadananda Pandit. Let's have a look at page 459. Even when a person becomes an offender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, he can still be delivered simply by taking shelter of the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In other words, the chanting of Hare Krishna is beneficial for eradicating all sins. But if one becomes an offender to the holy names of the Lord, then he has no chance of being delivered. This is from Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion. And then we look at some quotes from Prema Vivata by Jagannanda Pandit. The holy name of Krishna is compassionate and invested with Krishna's full potencies. He can easily liberate all moving and non-moving beings. One who chants but commits offenses against the holy name is burdened with grievous sins. This causes upheavals in his spiritual life. Chanting the holy name is a prime duty and religious practice of the jiva and his ultimate shelter. But caution must be taken that the aspiring devotee is not thrust down into maya due to offenses. Offenses can misguide the devotee into believing that chanting is a mundane activity. In this way, he ends up with meager material benefits from chanting and is deprived of the real benediction. Even after being instructed about chanting of the holy name, if one remains unconcerned and does not avoid namaparad, he at once comes under the ominous shadow of all 10 offenses, and such a foolish person drowns in the whirlpool of distress. Just as a child who refuses to eat because he is angry with his mother will naturally always be weak and susceptible to disease, in the same way, without abrogating the 10 offenses, such a fool may chant the holy name, but his offenses will greatly hinder his progress. The proper way to chant the holy name is to always avoid the 10 offenses. There is no need for any other process of spiritual elevation other than chanting the holy name. For the holy name alone can award one the highest perfection. So we can understand when we look at this that we live in the world of Namaparad. It's a pretty bleak and nasty world. What's the next step? What's the next step after Namaparad? Namabhas. Yeah, Namabhas. There are three stages. Stage of purely chanting, stage of Namabhas, and Namaparad. Okay. So, why aren't we taking that next step? Why are we locked in this whimsical stage where we don't really take the offenses seriously? How is that?
Inattention.
Okay. What else? Come on, you guys, wake up.
You're stupid?
Yes. They're not telling us we're full.
Not serious.
They're not serious?
Okay. And maybe we don't really realize how detrimental these offenses are.
Okay, good. Some good reasons. My strong feeling from talking with devotees is an amazing reason that we don't take the next step too seriously is because we really don't understand it. We don't have a clear understanding of what Namabhas is.
Yes.
So if you don't understand what something is, how can you strive for it? Isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, is there anybody here that could confidently tell me what Namabhas is?
No.
Right? So we can understand that, you know, maybe a major part of the problem is that we just don't know what we're doing. It's a common problem. We don't know what we're doing. So I thought today we'd explore Namabhas a little bit and try and get a clearer idea of what it is, that although it cannot give us Krishna Prema, it can give us everything else. What is that everything else? And, you know, just take us a little bit of a step further, step beyond Namaparad. So the first thing I want to do is just give a framework, because one of the reasons that there's so much confusion is that when the acharyas speak, especially when Bhagavad Gita speaks, because of the way they deal with the subject, it's very subtle, and it's a little bit difficult sometimes to really catch how everything is fitting together. And, you know, like that. So what we've done is just made it a little more simple to access. So we'll just have a look at it first in terms of, you know, what it is and how it works. So first, of course, is the question, what is it? What is Namabhas? It's a dim manifestation or a reflection of the holy name in the sky of the heart. It's got nothing to do with anything outside of us. It's got to do with what's happening in the heart. If we are in a state of good practice of Nam, the sun is slowly rising within the heart. But if we're at the level of offenses, and even if we're at the level of Namabhas, then there are certain elements that are covering the sun from our vision, the soul's eyes. So we can't actually understand who the holy name is, the nature of his mercy and potency. We just can't understand it. So let's have a look at this. The first is a quote from Antia 3 of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Haridas Thakur said, as the sun begins to rise, even before it is visible, it dissipates the darkness of night. This is what dim manifestation of the Namabhasa looks like. With the first glimpse of sunlight, fear of thieves, ghosts, and demons immediately disappears. And when the sun is actually visible, everything is manifest, and everyone begins performing his religious activities and regulative duties. Similarly, the first hint that a fenceless chanting of the Lord's holy name is awakened dissipates the reactions of sinful life immediately. And when one chants the holy name offenselessly, one awakens the service and ecstatic love at the lotus feet of Krishna. Liberation is the insignificant result derived from a glimpse of the awakening of offenseless chanting of the holy name. With intellect purified by faith and all sincerity, please intently worship Krishna, an ocean of good qualities, who destroys all darkness, who purifies those who purify others. Just when the semblance of his name appears in the heart, it destroys the greatest accumulation of sins. Just as light prior to the rising of the sun destroys all darkness. This is just Namabhas. Very, very powerful. As the brilliance of the sun extinguishes the darkness, the holy name extinguishes the darkness of illusion or maya. However, clouds or fog may cover the sun from the viewer, so that only a portion of light is perceived. In the same way, when ignorance, agyan, and material tendencies and anattas are prominent in the living entity, they obstruct the sun of the holy name. So the devotee experiences only a portion of the full effect of the name. Now this kind of understanding is important for us to have, because quite often we get disappointed, frustrated, because we're seriously trying to chant our rounds. The externals are all in shape. But if we're not taking our light, we're not taking note of the anattas that are there, of the ignorance, particularly in relation to our relationship with Krishna, sambandhagyan, then we're going to have trouble. And that trouble will be that we won't get past Namabhas. Regardless of the numbers we chant, regardless of how much time we spend with Nam, because we're not equipping ourselves appropriately, we're not going to actually get the desired result, the result we want. Though one may speak of the holy name being covered by the clouds of anattas, in reality the sun of the holy name can never be covered. Rather, the senses of the materially conditioned individual are covered. For this reason, in some cases, the holy name will appear in full force in the heart of the chanter, but in other cases, due to an abundance of ignorance and anattas, the effects of the name on the chanter will be minimal. Now, most of the time, when Bhaktivinoda Thakura is speaking about Namabhas, he's talking about Namabhas in relation to the Sirya Sarika. But then we hear of different kinds of Namabhas and we get a little bit confused, you know, what they are and you know, who makes that offense and all that sort of stuff. So I thought to just sort of clarify it a little bit by putting it into categories. So there are four types of Namabhas for the faithless materialist. Right? Sanket. Chanting Nam with a material object in mind, or chanting Nam unintentionally while thinking of some other object with the same sound. Famous example is Ajamil. Also the example of the Yavana, who chanted Haram, Haram, meaning, oh my God, what's this name? Terrible, terrible. But it just happened to be Hare and Ram. So he was chanting Nam about chanting, quite unintentionally. These, also worth noting, is that these coverings, or these forms of Namabhas, the lightest of them is Sanket, the worst of them is the last, which is Hela. Second one is Parihasa, chanting in a joking mood. Sometimes when you're on Sankirtan, people will make fun and they'll chant, you know, just for a joke. But it's Parihas Namabhas. Stoba, chanting in a derisive mood. Who is this Hare Krishna? What are you Hare Krishnas about? It's kind of derisive mood, you know? But still it's Namabhas. You see how merciful Nam is?
Yeah.
And Hela, chanting with disrespect. Huh? The holy name chanted by coincidence, in jest, derision or disregard is not accompanied by real faith in Krishna and is therefore considered as a crude kind of Namabhas. So there's absolutely no level of faith in such chanting. It's just a coincidence, some kind of freak experience. So it's a very crude kind of Namabhas. Then we have two kinds of Namabhas for the spiritualist. The third is Pratibimba Namabhas. This is a reflection in the heart. It's not a manifestation or a dim manifestation or a semblance. It's a reflection. And it's a reflection because it's in the heart, which is full of perverted, envious knowledge. So it's, you know, the anarthas that in the heart are arising from a perverted understanding, envious understanding. And this actually obstructs bhakti and is therefore called an aparad. So with the example that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives is of the Mayavadi who chants Hare Krishna. He's not doing it with any idea of, you know, Nama Nami are not different, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I'm his servant. He's got none of this understanding. In fact, he's quite envious in his nature. So then this kind of Pratibimba Namabhasa is a kind of Namabhasa that such a person is chanting. And then you have Chaya Namabhasa. Chaya means obstructed light. When the light is very obstructed, it's there, you're getting some sense of light, but it's very obstructed. So this gives rise to a dim but true image within the heart. It's a true image, but very, very, very dim. So this, from partial faith in Nam, Chaya Shradabhas comes to Chaya Namabhas. So if you don't, if you're not actively cultivating your faith in Nam, the giver of Nam, and he is not different than Nam, then it's Chaya Shradabhas. And it'll give problems, because it's the form of Namabhas will be Chaya, this obstructed light. But this kind of Namabhas, it potentially can develop into pure chanting the holy name and Krishna Prem. But it's a long, laborious path to take. And because of the nature of it, when there's a partial faith in Krishna and in Nam, what's the other part? The other part is doubt, isn't it? So if there's only a little bit of faith, then we can understand that there's doubts also. So those doubts can quite often give rise to further lack of faith, or they can give rise to criticism, so many things which, you know, will complicate things. So we want to be careful about the nature of our faith. And actually, for the sincere and serious chanter, there's only one kind of Namabhas. It's called Shraddha Namabhas. So if one is still troubled by anarthas and ignorance, I think most of us fall into that category, but we consciously and carefully chant Nam with genuine faith, then our faith is Shraddha Namabhas. If that's the nature of our faith, then very quickly anarthas are dissipated. And why they're very quickly dissipated is interesting. It's because what will develop from such serious and faithful chanting of Nam is Nam Sambandha Gyan and Ashakti, attachment to chanting. So then obviously when you have attachment for chanting, you are aware of your relationship with them. Obviously the anattas are going to, you know, be, you know, it's just like a strong wind is going to blow them all away. It's not going to be a major problem. So this kind of chanting, and it's within our grasp right now. This kind of chanting is within our grasp if we're serious. We don't have to stay in our variety. It's a very simple formula. We are still troubled by anattas and ignorance, but all we have to do is consciously and carefully chant Naam with faith and care not to offend Naam. So if we do that, it's pretty amazing. We can, just by that chanting, we can attain everything except Krishna prayer. But everything is a lot. Everything is a lot. It's not Krishna Prem, but the interesting thing, the good news is, by chanting the holy name in Sharanam Abbas, we will eventually come to the stage of chanting Nam purely, if we diligently avoid offenses. And by chanting in this way, we are certain to obtain Krishna Prem. So, it's an interesting subject, but the main thing that I'm trying to make you aware of is the step is not such a big step. You're not changing your external practice. You're not changing your numbers. You're just changing your consciousness.
So for us, Mataji, that we should actually put our effort more in chanting consciously and carefully rather than worrying about anathas, because...
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's important to know what the anattas are, it's important to know what the ignorance that's blocking us is. But in the practice, it's more important, and we'll get onto this a little later, the most important thing is the actual chanting, how we're dealing with the chanting. Because, you know, you've cooked something and burnt something. So you're sitting there scrubbing, 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 trying to get the pot clean, scrubbing, scrubbing, scrubbing. And some friend comes by and says, look, just put some acid in it. Just put, you know, something like that in it. And like that it's clean. Yeah? So with scrubbing, 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 that's like trying to scrub your own heart. And a friend comes by, Nam comes by. Sadhu comes by, says, let's just do it like this, just chant Hare Krishna carefully. Yeah? So then it is a far more powerful way of doing it.
And this is about the Naam Sambandh Gyan? This is the Naam and Naam Gyan? Is this Naam Sambandh Gyan?
We'll look into that. There's a number of aspects to that. But are we clear about what I'm saying here? Is there any questions on it?
Mataji, I'm sure we cannot give a time frame to this kind of a thing when it says very quickly one can cross through this stage.
Yeah.
Is there any rough time span we can talk about?
You know what, it really depends on your endeavor.
Sure.
It really depends on your endeavor and the mercy. So if the mercy factor is there, then a large part of your endeavor is going to have to be a mood. Mood is like that. I guess, you know, like it's hard to put a, as you say, it's hard to put time frame on it. But definitely it's going to be a lot quicker than staying with the Naam Aparad.
Can we say several years, Mataji?
It doesn't have to be that long.
Okay.
Especially if you're consciously you're conscious about the need for non-sankirtan. One of the biggest hindering blocks for devotees is they have no understanding of the importance of non-sankirtan in their life. That's one of the biggest stumbling blocks. How many of you are involved in non-sankirtan on a daily basis? A lot of the ignorance is there because of this. Naam Sankirtan is a very powerful way to build faith, very powerful way to clear anattas, so many things.
And like you have mentioned earlier, when we speak about Naam Sankirtan, this can be done at home with the family.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to be a massive thing. You know, quite often you can generate a better mood if it's a small group.
Sure.
So, but Naam Sankirtan is so important.
Okay.
Yeah. Should be part of the daily routine. Even if it's not a long period of time. Just, you know, to give yourself a bit of a break.
Yes.
Here's after all what Mahaprabhu gave.
Mm-hmm.
You had a question?
Yeah, Mataji, when we say Naam rather than Namah Bhas chanting, so I'm just wondering, like, it's kind of stage one devotee achieve, like, reaches, and or it's mixed, like, sometimes it's a Namah Bhas, sometimes it's a, like, you're trying to put care and attention in the chanting.
Yeah.
So first round,
yeah.
And then after that, it's not there.
Okay.
So is this the first, whatever we chant?
It's just a little start. You know, just in the same way that we can't say that there's Shraddha, then there's this, and this,
yeah,
and this,
yeah.
Prem. It's just, you know, like, Shraddha the Prem is like that. So in the same way, you know, it's not, you can't put it in the boxes.
Yeah.
Like that. But it will become thicker. You know, you have, at first it's mainly Namaparad, and there may be a little tinge of something moving towards Shraddha Namabhas. But then it will get thicker towards this side.
Yeah.
So like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
So Matthew, this means that because of Anarthas you're not able to chant attentively, the solution is that you have to try to keep doing that.
And also with the mood, the appropriate mood, you know.
Yes.
Mood is a big thing. Attention. I want to have a look, before we get too much more into this, because when you're aware of what these clouds and mist look like,
mm-hmm.
what they actually look like, then the whole picture comes into focus.
Yes.
So let's do that. We'll have a look at page... 169. This is from Bhagavanar Thakura's Bhajan Rahasya. And we can see that they're given as four clouds of anattas. But the main one that we want to look at and be aware, very strongly aware of, is the second one on the four kinds of illusion. It can be considered a cloud, but it's actually, main thing is fog. This is fog. So, and this is what we're looking at when we're looking about lack of sambandha gyan. We don't know our own identity. We don't understand the position of Krishna. We don't understand our relationship with Krishna or with Naam. So all of this is like a fog over our heart. You ever try driving through a fog? Pretty scary and difficult, you know. But this is the heart, this fog is over the heart in the form of lack of sambandha gyan. It's listed here as four kinds of illusion. A couple of them are more in terms of abhidaya gyan, about the process. We don't really understand the process or the goal of bhakti. We don't really understand what opposes devotional progress. We're looking at a blanket of ignorance that's covering the heart. Now, why this one, working on this one in terms of just, and doing it through bhajan is very powerful. Just reminding ourselves of who Krishna is, who I am, what my relationship with him is. You know, like, it's so powerful to do it through the Acharya's bhajans. And it's necessary because all the other clouds are born of this fog. All the other clouds are born of this fog. We see weaknesses of the heart. Attachment to things not related to Krishna, propensity to cheat and find fault, envy, desire for recognition. Where are they going to be if you're aware of who you are, who Krishna is, and what your relationship is? It's not going to be a problem. It's not going to be a problem. is a problem if we don't have this samband again. Same with the four kinds of offense. Another nasty cloud, the nama aparads, the saver aparads, Vaishnava aparad, jiva aparad. We're so grossly covered and so locked into externals that we don't really understand that the cockroach I'm about to squish is a jiva inside that cockroach. We're just so covered by ignorance that we eliminate all these jivas that happen to be a lot smaller than us. But body's smaller, but that jiva, we're jiva. It's all coming from this lack of sambandhya. All these kind of offense. You're not going to be offensive if you're not, the ignorance is a source of so much distress for us because it gives birth to offense, gives birth to, like making serious mistakes, gives birth to forgetfulness, which can get us into a lot of trouble. So many things. It's making sense?
Yeah.
And the fourth, thirst for the impermanent. Thirst for worldly pleasures, heavenly pleasures, mystic powers, liberation. You see how there's, none of these clouds have no basis if there's somebody there. And the nasty thing about these anattas is that they give birth to six enemies: lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy. And these anattas beget six waves: distress, illusion, hunger, thirst, old age, and death. Entangle us. I am this body. I really am this body. Yeah? And all of these are a source of our entanglement, and this entanglement is a source of our miseries. And the creeper of devotion in the heart, it can't grow for as long as these anattas are dominating the heart. Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us that all anattas were far away by the performance of Nam Sankirtan. Nam Sankirtan is so powerful. So you're just seeing, it's just everything is stemming from the lack of sambandha gyan. That's why. Yeah, I know I drive you mad, but I'm always saying, build your relationship with Nam. Your relationship with Nam is very important. Why? There's sambandha gyan, so much mess. Yeah?
Basically, the starting point for sambandha gyan, should we say, is to understand where we are at.
You know what? We can do it as a load carrier.
Or
an essence seeker. This is bringing us to a very regular topic, but one that no one is catching the importance of. We'll look at it.
Okay.
We'll even look at it right now, I think. Okay. I think it's on page 408. Let me just check. Yes.
Mataji, here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying Nam Sankirtan. He's not saying chanting Nam.
No, he's not saying
Japa. He's saying
Sankirtan. Okay, so how many times have we talked about this? Yes, yes, Mataji. Yes, yes, Mataji. But I want to really have a look at it today because it is such an important thing. You can go into a whole intellectual exercise and study everything about sambandha gyan. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. You know, you can read everything that's ever been written on sambandha gyan. You know, or you can just be very, very practical and get serious about that mouth of yours. You know, if essence, I mean, what do we, you know, have we got time to waste? Have we got time to waste? The days are ticking by. Yeah. So let's have a look at what Prabhupada says here. I'm really going to hit you with it. Hopefully because it's Kartik, it'll finally make sense to you. Make sense to you means we'll get serious about it. Let's see what we have to say here. And please stop me if you have questions or comments. Unless one faithfully chants the Hare Krishna mantra, Krishna does not reveal himself. Seva muga hi jiva do swayameva sparatya da. We cannot realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by any artificial means. We must engage faithfully in the service of the Lord. Such service begins with the tongue. So we can't do it by any artificial means. We have to do it by service, and the service begins with the tongue. Which means that we should always chant the holy names of the Lord and accept prasad, Krishna prasad. We should not chant, always here we're talking sada. The acharyas will never give anything that's important. There are two words for always in Bengali. One is, in Sanskrit, the sadatam. But sada means regularly. Like in Shishastika 3, we're talking, always chant the holy name. It's possible by following these four qualities that were given by Mahaprabhu. But that's the platform, Shishastikam 3 is the platform of Nishta. You cannot chant 24/7 at the stage of Nishta. You're still locked in so many, you've got so many anattas, one of them being bodhicanse. How are you going to chant 24/7? When we're talking 24/7, the word used would be nirantara, without break. That's for the liberated soul. That's not for us. So here, we're not saying that always chant the holy names means 24/7 I have to chant, you know, bye, goodbye kids, goodbye deity worship, goodbye cleaning the house, you know, goodbye everything, just chant Harinam. We're not talking that. That's fanaticism. It doesn't get you very far. But what we're talking about is we're regularly chanting Harinam and we're accepting prasadam. We should not chant or accept anything else. When this process is faithfully followed, the Supreme Lord reveals himself to the devotee.
I have a question.
Sure. Note that the word faithful is coming up a lot here. We have to have faith that this works. That yes, Krishna, service to Krishna starts with my tongue. I have faith. The Prabhupada and the Acharyas know what they're talking about. I have faith it's going to work. Yeah?
Is it like faith? Because theoretically, I, for example, accept this.
Okay.
But this is not realized. It's more theoretically. Is it like going to a driving school and one thinks, okay, this is a teacher and he's going to teach me how to drive.
Mm-hmm.
But unless one doesn't have the experience, one cannot say, okay, I'm really sure. Okay, one says, okay, this is school, I can go.
Well, but the experience comes by practice. Are you practicing it? Are you still got your favorite chocolate in your favorite restaurant? The practice gives the experience.
Mm-hmm.
You see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he tells us that the tongue is the most voracious of the senses. It will eat you alive if you give it a chance. It will eat you alive. It will eat your spiritual life alive if you give it a chance. You see how simple it is, but we can't follow it because we're attached to the tongue. This is where prayer comes in. This is where begging for mercy comes in. And this is where practice comes in. Yeah? Not very palatable because, you know, the tongue is uncontrolled. Let's have a look at any further question. You have a question?
Yeah. My question was about not using the tongue to talk about topics not related to Krishna.
Right.
At my level, it's very difficult.
Well, also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains in Bhakti Aloka that there, there's different standards for grihastha and renunciate. So with the grihastha, the kids are at school, they're studying economics, they're studying psychology, they're studying so many things. You have a relationship with that child, they're going to want to talk to you about things. So, you know, that's going to make sense that you do that. And that's not a big problem. But here we're talking about, you know, like prajapa, basically. And there's eight different kinds of prajapa. So, you know, we're not talking about... It'll be different for grihastha. You have different duties to perform, you know, different responsibilities. For renunciate, they should be very strict. And then deal with materialistic stuff. Seva Mukha Hijiva Do means that the service of the Lord begins with the tongue. This refers to chanting. By chanting Hare Krishna, one begins the service of the Lord. Isn't that interesting? We begin our service of the Lord by chanting Hare Krishna. Another function of the tongue is to taste and accept the Lord's prasad. We have to begin our service to the unlimited with the tongue and become perfect in chanting and accepting the Lord's prasad. Perfection in chanting means to give up the 11 offenses. To accept the Lord's prasad means to control the entire set of senses. You see why it's so difficult? It's a major weapon of Maya Devi. You control your tongue, you can control all your senses. So she's going to let you do it easily? Forget it. It's her business to make sure you stay in this place. Huh? To accept the Lord's prasad means to control the entire set of senses. The tongue should be engaged in chanting and in eating the Lord's prasad so that the other senses will be controlled. Chanting is the medicine and prasad is the diet. With these processes, one can begin his service. So if these two processes are not there, are we looking at bhakti or are we looking at karma yoga? What are we looking at? So with these processes, one can begin his service, and as the service increases, the Lord reveals more and more to the devotee. So the revelation is not going to come by some trick or by some siddha touching you on the head or some mystical mantra. It's not going to come like that, believe it or not. It's not going to come like that. It's going to come by your service. And your primary service is make sure the tongue is engaged properly. Wow. Pretty hard to swallow, isn't it? With our material senses, we cannot see Krishna, nor can we even hear his name. We can begin to perceive him when we advance in devotional service. That devotional service begins with the tongue, not the legs, eyes, or ears. The tongue must be utilized to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and take Krishna prasadam. Thus the tongue has a dual function. And by utilizing it in this way, we will realize Krishna. If just if we utilize the tongue in this way, we will realize Krishna. We cannot see Krishna with our material eyes, nor hear about him with material ears, nor touch him with our hands. But if we engage our tongue in his service, he will reveal himself saying, "Here I am. Here I am." It's so simple, but so tough. Huh? It's Kartik. You should take advantage of the mercy of Kartiki Devi. Huh? A going to get started on this. The tongue should be engaged in chanting and in eating the Lord's prasad, so the other senses will be controlled. Chanting is a medicine, prasad is a diet. With these processes, one can begin his service, and as the service increases, the Lord reveals himself more and more to the devotee. When a devotee engages his senses favorably in devotional service, the Lord, through his causeless mercy, reveals himself to the devotee. It's not an intellectual affair. It's not how much you know. We're talking about engaging your senses favorably. So then the Lord, through his causeless mercy, reveals himself to the devotee. This is a conclusive Vedic process. Important statement. This is the conclusive Vedic process. This is the way to do it.
How can one be engaged unfavorably?
Wrong mood is a big one. If the mood is inappropriate. You're very proud of your personality, very proud of your devotional attributes, and got nothing good to say about anybody else. It's not terribly favorable. Yeah. The Vedas also indicate that simply by chanting the names of the Lord, one can without a doubt become spiritually advanced. We cannot approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the speed of mind or words. But if we stick to devotional service, we can easily and quickly approach him. In other words, the Supreme Lord is attracted by devotional service. And he can approach us more swiftly than we can approach him with our mental speculation. Can you see now why it's easy and quick? It's not us going, it's Krishna coming.
He can come.
He can come like that. fastest we can go is speed of mind. Krishna can come a lot faster than that. Yeah? So does that answer your question? That's why you can't put a time frame on it. It's a matter of whether you can attract Krishna's mercy. And that'll be through your sincerity.
Yeah.
So in essence, our endeavor, the only value of our endeavor is in whether it attracts Krishna's mercy or not. And if it's an unfavorable endeavor, if it's offensive in any way, it's not going to attract it. Especially if we're offensive in our dealing with other Vaishnavas. Or even with other Jivas. Krishna's not impressed. Yeah? Any questions or thoughts? But you know what's really interesting? We're all frowning and we're all really worried. This is real serious stuff. But you know what? It's all taken care of by just doing it. It's all, the anger with people and the negativity, all this is taken care of just by doing it. So Purnasya, Mama and Prashad, they will take care of it.
Thank you for saying that, Mataji.
What I'm wondering is that I've seen devotees practicing since almost 20 years or so, and they are active in preaching.
Yeah.
But they are so harsh with other, newcomers. They really, if you see, even in material world, people don't speak with
That's
others
right.
like that. It's so painful. It's so hard to see, and so many people get hurt and they stop to come because of these dealings they had. I have seen so many times. And
I saw it this morning in the temple. It's very prevalent. Because at the moment, unfortunately, the emphasis is on process and not personalism. Everything is about process of devotional service. But actually, process, where is it going to get you? Mm-hmm. It's the giver of the process that we want to develop our relationship. You can't have a relationship with a process. You can't have reciprocation from a process. You can't have mercy from a process. You can't be chastised by a process. Right? you know, it's impersonalistic. It's the influence that Babaji is in the impersonalist in the movement. Mm-hmm. It's very unfortunate, because the whole thing is that if we are developing, and this is why Sambandha Gyan is so important, because Sambandha Gyan, what we're looking at is relationship. Our relationship not only with Krishna, but with his energies. Mm. Krishna and his energies, you can't separate them.
You mentioned this matter of personalism. I've seen so many times devotees leaving our movement because they don't feel personally taken care of. They don't have any personal relationship with others, so they go to other yoga movement that they are impersonalists.
Yeah.
But the people, the members are so much more personal
caring.
Than they are
right.
so much more caring. So
yeah.
I've seen so many times that people leave
right.
because they feel like more, you know, in a personal relationship in some
right.
impersonal movement.
Yeah. It's quite painful to see that. But then the responsibility falls back on us, become a personalist. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Madhuji, my personal experience, what I've seen, that this thing happens when she's saying that 20-year-old devotee is behaving like that. My experience is that all this problem arises because the mood in performing the devotional service is not correct from the beginning, or whether even if they're 20-year-old. The mood is not, like you've been saying, devotional or as such.
Mm-hmm.
For the pleasure of the Lord.
For the pleasure of the Lord. The activity is there.
Yeah, but the essence of it is that they think they're following a process. They don't think they're developing a relationship. The essence of it is that.
Okay.
That they, you know, they just got a process for everything else. There's a process for the emotional
service. So this.
So we just do this, and this, and the whole thing works.
Correct.
It
doesn't
work.
Oh, but they think they want to do it for Krishna.
My observation is that there are incredibly sincere devotees in this movement. Incredibly sincere devotees in this movement. They're not being trained.
I joined, the whole training was like that.
Yeah.
Everything was process and, like we were thinking pure devotional service means don't take care of your body, don't talk to your family members because don't want Maya sue you. But then if when devotees got sick, they cannot serve in the temple, then they have to go home to their parents because
it's so ridiculous. But
it was like that.
It's a young movement. We've got to keep a perspective that it's historically and socially it's very undeveloped. The movement is very undeveloped. And you look at where we're coming from, you know, Prabhupada really didn't have much to work with. So it's going to take some time.
But it's just a misunderstanding.
It's not lack of sincerity. It's not any kind of enviousness or all that kind of stuff. Like yesterday morning, it was quite cold, early morning. Young Grihastha, really fired up, really enthusiastic, sitting outside on the cold marble, chanting his rounds. And he was really into it. He was really sincerely wanting to do it. But his mantra was something from another planet. It was not Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So I was also chanting there. And I was thinking, I don't know this person. You know, I don't want to offend this person. But then I just thought, this is ridiculous. So they probably empower me. You know, I just correct him in a way that, you know, it's beneficial and he's grateful. So I went up to him. And as soon as I said, can I speak to you for a minute, Prabhu? He immediately got up. He was so enthusiastic. You know, such a sweetheart. He was such a sweetheart. And as soon as I said to Prabhu, you've got to be very careful when you chant, that you're chanting the whole mantra, and it's in the right order, and you're like that. You know, and he was so appreciative. And there must be so many people in this movement like that, that they just are not getting the training that they need. And one another devotee that I'm hearing regularly, and is a senior brahmachari in the temple, you know, I just don't have the heart to approach him, it's not my business. Hariyama, Hariyama, Yama Yama, Hari Hari. Very diligently, very loudly, every morning. But where is that going? You see? So we talk a lot about, you know, like, oh, you know, this process, does it really work? Did really Prabhupada know what he was talking about? Acharyas know what they're talking about. They know what they're talking about. But we don't know how to practice it. We just do not know. It's a simple thing. And we just, you know, just the just hearing what you're chanting every day, that every mantra is there, every syllable is there. So important. Where's the question of chanting a lakh? It'll kill you to chant 16 rounds if you're serious.
I was going to say that.
It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort.
8 rounds, I have to eat something because I just don't have the energy to chant 8 more.
It takes a lot of energy to chant well. If you're not connected.
Yeah.
On the prasad part, Mataji, when the congregational devotees had come,
mm-hmm.
like last class they asked, what you were saying about prasad, but
right.
when you go to our relatives and all,
right.
and they're not, then, you know, then it becomes a very uncomfortable situation for us.
Right.
So how can we guide them, Mataji, that then when they're just beginning, they're chanting, they're beginning, they're honoring prasadam at home, they've started the journey, but they said when we go to our relatives, then what should we do?
Are they taking prasad to their relatives' place?
No. Like somebody's called them for dinner or lunch, some get together, like, you know, social, you know.
Yeah.
So
one thing they can always do, which would be helpful for them and for their relatives, is they can just say, I was inspired to make something special, share with everybody. They don't have to know it's prasadam. Like that.
Do they have to also eat, Mother? Do you want the others?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. There are ways you can deal with it to make it prashadi. There's prashadam, and there's bhog, and there's prashadi. So it's not ideal, but if you, you know, if there's mahaprasad that's added to to bhog, becomes prashadi. So it doesn't have the reaction, negative reaction of bhog, but it's not full-scale prasadam also. So you can do that, or you can add mahatosi, you can do little things like that. The other thing you can do, which I feel is probably more realistic, is to just pray to your Ishtadev or whoever they're worshipping. I must have done something really terrible to find myself in this mess. I really have blown it. I know I'm going to most benefit by only honoring your prasad, and now I'm socially trapped in a going and eating book. I don't know what kind of rascal I was last time, Lord, but you better help me out of this.
Yes.
Yeah?
Can we also suggest them, because Preeti was very hard, because I said, you know, after some time you will get a taste of honoring only prasadam. When the class was over, then Preeti was upset with me and she said, you are again bringing that fanaticism. And so I thought about it and
okay.
I just wanted to seek your advice. We can ask them, obviously, that when we go to relatives, they can ask them to cook, you know, whatever they're cooking without onion and garlic.
Oh, that's a must.
And then,
yeah.
and then they can just mentally, you know, offer it or just seek some forgiveness, or, you know, is there any way around which they can begin?
If you're in a position to mentally offer it, it's okay. But if they're young devotees, they're
yeah.
not probably don't have really the strength for that. But definitely, it's very difficult in Indian circumstance because there's so much bowing to social etiquette and culture,
yeah.
and it's really tough. But if you have the strength to just at least say that much, you know, like, we're really trying to, you know, follow a new lifestyle now, Mom, is it okay if you cook without onion and garlic just this one time? A lot of it's got to do with how you say things. You know, but at least if they... See, why I'm saying they should always take prasadam is because prasadam is very, very powerful. And just by that, you know, they're eating all boy, but they're having prasadam, over a period of time of doing that, it will change them. Madhav Damada, he was saying that his father is a mediator. And when his father came to stay with him, he made a point of giving him Charamrita every day. And after 3 or 4 days, the father said, I don't want this Charamrita anymore. And he said, why? He said, I'm thinking about becoming vegetarian.
We had a member in the group, Mata, the first yatra we got, somebody's a relative came.
Okay.
And I just told him, Chand, you come to the yatra. He just came like a spiritual picnic.
Okay.
He allowed, I said, come. And then after a few days, I asked him, that few weeks rather, I asked him how he was. He says, he started chanting when you told him, but he left it. I said, why? He said, I could not eat meat. You know, he says, I just couldn't do it. And I don't want to become a yogi. So I left chanting. You know, he says, I don't want to become like that.
Yeah.
He says, it was so amazing. In just days, he just started eating.
Yeah.
You
know.
The similar thing happened in our trust, Mother. This devotee used to come. He used to be a firm follower of Osho, and then he started coming to the class. He's from her brother's office, and then he started, you know, following. And he was like totally against everything that he would say, you know. But he would still come. There was some faith in him. And then he started chanting, and he was a meat eater, and he would argue on every possible thing. And then after like 3 months, he just said one day in the class, he said, you know, I ordered the meat and I just could
and
not
eat it. And I wanted to eat it, but I couldn't.
I could not eat it.
And he said, I've left now.
Left it.
And now he's chanting 16 rounds. It's been just like a year.
Wow.
And he's telling us, take me to Vrindavan in Karthik.
So. And now he agrees with everything, like whatever we utter, he will explain that more, you know, with like, yeah, this is the only right thing.
So the new ones, we just say the one, I think it's a very good suggestion you've given us, that they can bring prasadam from home. And
just something special.
Special.
Uh-huh. So nobody has to know it's prasadam, just they wanted to give something special. Bring something
can
special.
I share?
Yeah.
Because we have to go to his parents' house every Diwali.
Right.
And the tradition is that we all eat together.
Okay.
So, the first time, like after we became devotees, and so I started telling them that, Mom, you always make everything. From this time, Diwali, I will bring everything. So they're so happy. Now she calls me and tells me, okay, what all are you bringing tomorrow? So I take the dinner for everyone. They don't
That's
go to prasadam.
Also,
even if it's just every now and again, this time we'll cook and bring. You can do like. Do a little bit creative
in
your thinking.
If it's a close family member, Mataji, what we used to do was like my parents around, we told them to, might not be suitable for the very young ones, but we tell them to cook without onion and garlic.
Oh, that's a must.
And then like don't do anything with it, don't taste. And then we go there, then we offer to the Lord, and then everybody eats after that.
They'll take a bit of time if they're very new, because their own faith is not strong.
Yes, but otherwise this also works.
Yes, that's also a good idea.
Had also amazing experience this year and last year. My parents were 2 months staying with us.
Okay.
And they know that we offer the food. So, especially my father is not so much fond of vegetarianism, and I was like thinking, what will happen when he comes?
Okay.
But it was so amazing, Giriraj's mercy. They wouldn't taste the food, and my niece was also last year there, this year as well. So my mother would cook according to our diet, of course. And then she would say, you cannot eat anything. You have to wait till the food is offered. And then sometimes on the phone I told her, okay, you know, go and offer it to Giriraj and other deities. So she started to do the offering last year when we were not home. So all the time the food has been offered. So, and after that my father became so much fond of, you know, he was all the time saying, this is the best thing to eat, it's perfect. And he liked the things we were cooking. He would say that, yeah, when I'm back, I would like to try to cook also these things, because he likes also to cook. And also this year, it was so amazing that, you know, how much affect has on them. And my mother, was telling me recently that they, my sister ordered some food, which were some meat involved, and she said, I just felt, I cannot look at this thing. I felt so sorry for the animals, and I just couldn't, you know, take that. And
yeah. Powerful. It's very powerful. In the Bhakti Marg, the path of devotional service, one must strictly follow the regular principles by first controlling the tongue. The tongue can be controlled if one chants the Hare Krishna mantra, does not speak about any subjects other than those concerning Krishna, and does not taste anything not offered to Krishna. If one can control the tongue in this way, brahmacharya and other purifying process will automatically follow. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we gradually develop our eternal relationship with the Supreme Person. How's that happening? By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we gradually develop our eternal relationship with the Supreme Person.
This noun is the seed for everything.
What's stopping the relationship now? The covering?
Yeah.
Chanting nam is bhatyata bhatana mantra. It's basically just uncovering the person we are. I mean, I would have a relationship with the Supreme Person. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, we gradually develop our eternal relationship with the Supreme Person and thus attain the perfection called Swarup Siddhi. We should take advantage of this benediction and go back home, back to Godhead. To associate with the holy name and chant the holy name is to associate with the personality of Godhead directly. Associating with Krishna directly when you pick up those beads. The holy name becomes manifest when one engages in the service of the holy name. The service and the submissive attitude begins with one's tongue. One must engage his tongue in the service of the holy name. Our Krishna consciousness movement is based on this principle. We try to engage all the members of the Krishna consciousness movement in the service of the holy name. Since the holy name and Krishna are non-different, the members of the Krishna consciousness movement not only chant the holy name of the Lord offenselessly, but also do not allow their tongues to eat anything that is not first offered to the Supreme Person directly. The process of understanding Krishna is Sevan Mukha, or rendering service. This is a very interesting statement Prabhupada's making here. The process of understanding Krishna is Sevan Mukha. I tell you quite frankly, you cannot understand the essence of Prabhupada's books unless you're following this. You know, you may have an intellectual understanding, you know, so many things, you know, be a good orator, but you won't actually understand what Prabhupada is saying if your tongue's not clean. It's interesting. But, you know, like all of the, it's interesting. This process of understanding Krishna is Sevan Mukha. By rendering service. Realization of Vasudeva is possible by rendering service beginning with the tongue. The tongue has two functions, to vibrate and taste. So if one repeatedly hears and vibrates the Hare Krishna mantra and tastes prasad, food offered to Krishna, by this very simple method one will realize Vasudeva Krishna. Krishna will reveal himself. It is not that by our endeavor alone we can understand Krishna, but our endeavor in loving service will make us qualified. And then Krishna will reveal himself. With the dull material senses, we cannot understand Krishna's name, form, and so forth. Why is this? Krishna is completely spiritual, and he is also absolute. Therefore, his name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia are also spiritual. Due to material conditioning or material bondage, we cannot presently understand what is spiritual. But this ignorance can be removed by chanting Hare Krishna. If a man is sleeping, he can be awakened by sound vibration. You can call him, come on, it's time to get up. But though the person is unconscious, hearing is so prominent Even the sleeping man can be awakened by sound vibration. Similarly, overpowered by this material conditioning, our spiritual consciousness is presently sleeping. But it can be revived by this transcendental vibration of
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Therefore, to understand Krishna as He is, we have to purify our senses. And to do that, we should carefully follow the principles of Seva Mukha Hijivado. See? Purify our senses. Starts with the tongue. Isn't that interesting? Don't try to understand the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna with your present senses, but simply chant their holy names, Hare Krishna. Then when the dust on the mirror of your heart is cleansed away, you will understand everything. It's all going to come through now. The tongue has first of all to be engaged, not the hands and legs. I have to serve Krishna. So yes, I'm ready. I'm expanding my hands. I'm going there. But Shastra says, no, 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 not your hands and legs. Your tongue. This is the one. First of all, engage your tongue. This is astonishing. How can I serve with tongue? If I have to serve, I have got my hands and legs, my eyes, and I... No, Krishna says tongue. Shastra says tongue. This is very peculiar. If you engage your tongue, so how to engage my tongue? What is the business of my tongue? Two business only, to taste or eat and chant. Chant Hare Krishna with tongue and take Krishna prasad, and you will conquer Krishna. This is the program. Seva Mukha Hi Jivado. If you do not control your tongue, if you feel inconvenient in taking prasadam, that means you are not making progress. That's a good checklist. This is an interesting one also. The more you chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the more you become fit to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Starts with a tongue. That is a process, Seva Mukha Jivado. You cannot see God. You cannot see Krishna by your these blunt senses. But if you purify your senses, Seva Mukha Jivado, that purification begins from tongue. That purification. So by the tongue you can do two things. We can taste foodstuff and we can vibrate sound. So if you engage your tongue for vibrating this transcendental sound and do not take anything except prasadam of Krishna, then your spiritual life immediately begins. Then gradually as you advance the spiritual life, Krishna reveals himself to you. Here I am. You cannot see Krishna, but by being satisfied with your service, Krishna sees you. Just like you cannot see sun at night. When the sun sees you, you can see the sun and yourself both. Similarly, when Krishna sees you being satisfied with your service, then you can see Krishna. You can see yourself. You can see the whole world. Any questions or comments?
On the prasadam again, I think most of the devotees would think, well, that's the very easy one because we always offer, I mean, when they have, except the cases where they visit parents or they are going to some guests. So, you know, they say we buy things and offer it. What's the problem? What's the problem of offering my favorite chocolate, as you mentioned, or something like that? That would be yeah. A question in the mind, I think.
Yeah, well, Bhagavad Gita Govinda tells us offered with love. So, you know, like, if it's offered with love, and we're talking not New Age, but we're talking Bhakti, then it means my preoccupation with Krishna's satisfaction, not mine. So then, you know, we're going to cook it for Krishna's pleasure, and offer it for Krishna's pleasure. The Kali Yuga mind is an amazing machine. You know, so much deviation in the name of Krishna consciousness. Another major challenge that we're facing is it was very rare these days that devotees cook in the temples. So then, you know that it's not the same as the old days. You know, the old days had its problems also, but it wasn't prasadam that was a problem. It was devotees cooking, and they really had strong faith in the potency of prasadam, and they really wanted the devotees to eat prasadam.
I think in the West they cook, no?
Yes, yes.
They wash the pots also, they do everything.
Well, that's good.
Even for festivals, they don't hire anyone.
Sometimes new people can help in the kitchen, but under guidance, you know, to cut
cutting
something.
Cutting and stuff. That's not a big problem.
But no cooking.
No cooking.
No.
Main thing is the cooking. But in India, it's very, very prevalent.
Because outside, nobody, apart from devotees, know how to cook Indian food. So there is no option of hiring them. But in India, everybody knows how to cook Indian food. So that is why they need to hire people.
And also, cheap to hire.
Very cheap labor, yes.
That's also
there
fun.
It's not possible to hire people to cook Indian food, you know.
But there are also, since the, like in India, you still find many vegetarians. Maybe they are not devotees, but still maybe they can say, okay, he's at least vegetarian or something. In the West, it's different. So there is still consideration that devotees cook for devotees. There is still this mentality is there because the communities are also not so big like in India.
Right.
So the communities are small, but this consideration is there that devotees cook for other devotees.
That's really good.
Yes, Mataji, related to this point, like we also experience at times, like when we have our house programs, if it is like a lesser congregation, like for 50, 60 people coming, the Mataji is like we cook, we find it like comfortable doing it on a regular basis. But like if it's like the programs are more regular and there's going to be more, bigger congregation, then we find it tough.
Okay.
Managing within our limited, you know.
Yeah.
So we try to take the help from some devotee caterer, but then again, like you know, the Prabhuji who is handling this seva, but he is getting this actually the cooking done by the cooks. Yes. So it gets so tough, you know, at times to.
Doesn't have to be tough. It just means that you keep your numbers small. You know, maybe you have it on a rotation system or something. You invite people.
Yes.
It's better small anyway. It's not personalistic.
Yeah, but Padati, similar thing is in the temples also. We see that there's such a big number now here, like we see.
But somehow in the West they used to do it. Like Dina Bandhu Prabhu said, he told one time, you know, they used to have Ratayatras in San Francisco. They used to make halawa for thousands of people, and they had only few devotees, but they had huge pots, and that they used to do it.
That's the
point.
They maybe not so many preps, but they just distributed halawa and fruits or something, but huge amount.
Cutting, chopping, maybe we can.
That's okay.
Help
as long as they've got decent cleanliness, then.
Yeah.
And if the mood is strong in the kitchen, and they catch that mood, nothing like it. Yeah. You know, it's it takes the edge off prasadam when it's not cooked by devotees.
It's not like the prasadam actually. It's just like
the consciousness. The consciousness.
But with this, especially in temples coming, with kids it becomes difficult because they don't, everywhere is written prasadam in Prabhupada bakery and all. So they actually question, then they say, okay.
Yes, they say that we cannot eat outside the restaurants always, but here in Vrindavan when we are here, we are in the temple, so we can eat sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they want, like, they, it's not a regular practice, but when they are...
Take them to the master. I mean, it's not even healthy, that stuff.
Yeah.
It's junk.
But I'm surprised. I was not really aware that there are so many people cooking in India that they're not devotees.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, kind of having this consciousness that whatever I get in ISKCON temples, it's like there is a certain standard that is cooked by devotees and is prasadam is offered.
Different than the rest. Very different than the rest.
And they try to hire, like, they try to hire devotees, but not always possible.
Yeah. And you walk into the kitchen, you see where the standard is.
What about in circumstances, for example, traveling Sankirtan?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really difficult to make cooking arrangements, and you buy something, and you have to offer something which is not ideally, you know, prepared and cooked as for Krishna's taste.
It depends on how much you're prepared to compromise. I used to be out, when I was doing book distribution in Australia, I used to be out for a long time. I was a long book distributor because the main issue was all up and down the east coast of Australia. Just, you know, fill up the van, get to the next train station, fill it up again, like that, all up the coast. So I didn't go down, back to the temple sometimes for quite some weeks, but then, you know, it depends on, you know, how much you are addicted to prasadam. What I used to do, I used to make up a whole stack of muesli before I left. So I had my grains. And then I'd just buy milk and fruit, milk products and fruit, like that. And, you know, you can also get little gas burners and you can cook up a simple khichdi. One of the biggest problems we have because of our lack of taste for naam and for prasadam is that we're very quick to find reasons why we can't do things. Very, very quick.
Yeah.
You know.
In Germany they all had little gas cookers in their van.
Yeah.
I think Hari Kesh Maharaj, he like introduced.
Okay.
He had everyone had a like hose where you can shower or you can wash the pots and a little gas burner, just like this big kitchen. The rest books.
Oh, in the van?
Yes. They were cooking every day in the van.
Yeah.
My husband was for many years traveling, so every day he would cook.
Oh, really?
Yes. For many years he was Sankirtan devotee.
I know our Delhi devotees, the book distributors, Madhushana Bhidu, I asked them, so they cook every day. But, you know, they have a bus, so, you know,
right.
they carry their own stove, they just buy the vegetables and khichdi and stuff they make every day.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, I didn't know that they, in Germany...
Yeah. They were not even taking, like, pastas, which were, you know, pastas to cook, or yogurt, or many things they wouldn't... Whatever was prepared, they wouldn't use. Pasta they wanted to make, they would make in the temples themselves.
Especially grains. Grains was unheard of taking. But nowadays, it's considered fanaticism. Everybody buys grains and offers them.
You know what? There's sadhacha and there's lokacha. Which do you want to follow? Which do you want to follow? There's the common people philosophy and there's a sadhu way of doing things. Which one do you want to follow? Boils down to that, personal responsibility. You know? Okay.
That's why the taste and name is not coming nice.
Yeah. There was Padmanabha's father. Padmanabha Goswami's father, I think his name was Vishvamba Goswami. Was that right? Really amazing Vaishnava. A really amazing Vaishnava. So many stories about him and Radha Ramanji. Incredible Vaishnava. He, one morning, he, even in his old age, he was very attached to serving Radha Raman. So one morning he goes, you know, to wake him up, get him ready for Mangalarti. He does his usual thing and goes into the temple room. And Radharamanji is lying on his side, smiling at him. And he fainted. It's time for Mangalarti. So then a couple of the other, you know, Goswamis went and checked what's going on. And he's up. By that time, Radharamanji had climbed back onto it. I mean, a really amazing person, really exceptional person. He was very, very dear to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was very dear to him. And some time back, some years back, Guru Kripa Prabhu took him to the West. He wanted, you know, devotees to have his very amazing darshan and hear from him. And the whole time he was in the West, he didn't eat anything but potatoes. All time he was in the West, he didn't eat anything but potatoes. And you know, Guru Kripa, you know, he's a, you know, very fiery person, but he has great joy and respect for honest sadhus. So he didn't question him. He was just potato. What to do about this potato? And then finally, he just got too much, and he said, you know, like, Goswami, why are you only taking prasadam? It's potato. It's prasadam. He said, if I don't watch my tongue, I'll have no taste for chanting. I have no taste for none if I don't watch my tongue. Amazing. Yeah. And same with Bhakti Rasa Mrit Maharaj. Even when he was Brahmacharya, when he was Deva Mrit Prabhu, he would never take sweets. People are always offering him sweets. He never takes sweets. And finally somebody got up courage and said, why, Prabhu, you know, it never takes sweets. He said, if I take sweets, how will I taste the sweetness of now? So, you know, I just want to, like, it's so important that we, you know, make a conscious decision what we want to do. We want to follow the general mass of degrading influences in the movement, or we want to follow Prabhupada's standard. What do you want to follow? You know? You basically just have to do that. You saw with Prabhupada, in sometimes in emergency, he would, you know, buy a bog and offer it. One time he did it when they were hungry on the train traveling long distance. He bought some samosas, or the devotees bought samosas and he offered. But it's not like it was a common activity. You know? So this is something that we have to be very, very aware of, because the culture that Mahaprabhu gave, the culture that Prabhupada gave, was Madhyam culture. But that's not the culture we're living now. We should be very, very aware that now we are living Kanista culture. Kanista values. Kanista discrimination is ruling. So we have to make a choice. Do I want to be part of that? Or do I want to be part of the Madhyam culture scene? And it's not just about eating. It's about everything. It's about everything. Do I want intellectual liberalism, or do I want Anayatattva? That's a big one. Anything goes in this movement right now. I saw a photo the other day of someone claiming he was claiming to be a Prabhupada disciple, but he was dressed as a rabbi, Muslim rabbi. It was really weird. He had this, you know, like, whole full-on dress of a Muslim, and he was offering adi to Prabhupada. It took me a while to digest that one. They treat him like a demigod. Of Prabhupada said this moment wouldn't be destroyed from outside.
So
Prabhupada
is
dressed
like a Muslim.
Yeah. And preaching the glories of Islamic faith. And Prabhupada. You can see. Am I making my point of how we have to be conscious and we have to discriminate what we want to do? Because there's a lot of deviation.
I mean, if he's a Muslim and worshipping Prabhupada, it is nice, but...
Prabhupada disciple.
Anyway, this is an example. Look, you know, when I saw the photo, it just, you know, didn't hit home very nicely.
You know, a devotee who used to preach a lot in Iran, who also translated and published Bhagavad Gita, he wanted to become a mullah. So when he was giving public Bhagavad Gita classes with 200-300 people, he would give lots of examples from Quran, and you know, he make this, you know, to bring these points, because people would be so much, you know, but he wanted to preach Bhagavad Gita, but he would use those, you know, terms and then compare and to say this is actually not different, you know. He would present it in a way that people can accept it, but it was ultimately, you know, for the sake of preaching.
Yeah,
the
that's movement. A different thing. Yeah. You're preaching in Iran, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. That's intelligence. But we're talking about compromise and deviation. We're not talking about time, place, circumstance, adjustment. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Yeah.
I'm saying that the yatra this time, last time somebody complained that they said you are saying prasadam, but for the temple, the yatra which I'm going, they are eating on the dhabas, Mataji, and they are telling, because this is, everywhere is Brajraj, so you know there is no problem here. And then I found in Mayapur also the devotees sometimes they do like this, because they say this is Mayapur, the mercy flowing everywhere, you can eat anything you want, there is no.
See what I mean? That's a perfect example of our.
They brought Greater to Govardhan and they put everybody into those dhabas, and they said, this is next to Govardhan, mercy is there. You know, there is no problem. And this is all Brajraj. Yeah. People from all over.
Okay, then
and even they call it Brajraj.
Now they are all
Brajvasis. Who are cooking here, so there's no difference. Whosoever is here in this place.
You know what? We talked about this last week. I'm not going to go into it in detail.
We talked on Wednesday last week.
Oh, Wednesday. Okay. The difference between being on the dham and in the dham.
Yes.
Right? Good to remember that. In the dham means everything for Krishna's pleasure. Mm-hmm. On the dham means everything for my pleasure. Very simple checklist.
For Krishna's pleasure. That's a good point.
It's not prasadam just because you're so caught in the. You're not even in the dham, you're on the dham.
And nowadays it's not necessarily even Brijvasi is making the food. Like, I have so many people from MP and here and there who come to work in Braj, you know.
That's a fun.
There might probably not be Brijvasi's cooking anyway. Like,
There's also personal relationship. If we have some relationship with Krishna, we would like naturally, or to our deities, to take their Mahaprasad, not just to, okay, everything is okay. So where is the personal relationship with Krishna that, okay, this is offered to him now, you're receiving now.
And when you can't do that, it actually is, you know, you've got to make another arrangement to take from the temple or whatever. It's an austerity.
Yeah.
It's an austerity, actually, because you're used to taking remnants from the deity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're sick or whatever, sometimes there's different circumstances. Okay, I'm going to finish up by having a look at something else that's very interesting. Um, 471. Get back to Nam Abbas a little bit. was interesting because not only do we not know anything really about Namabhas, but we don't even know the benefits of it. That it's something that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad word. Namabhas means a semblance or facsimile of the holy name. Chanting Namabhas can't give us Krishna Prem, but it does give positive secondary results. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chintamani gives a very useful guide so that you can easily assess whether we've attained the stage of chanting. Now, the main thing to remember is if we're talking Namabhas, we're talking liberated platform. So, liberated platform, you can fall from it. That's why Krishna Das Kaviraj tells us that even at the stage of bhava, we don't stop Shravanam Kirtanam. Shravanam Kirtanam all the way up the ladder is essential aspect of our bhajan. So, Namabhas removes whatever sins one has committed. The semblance of the name gives liberation and destroys the influence of Kali. How would you like to experience not being influenced by Kali? It's a good one. The semblance of the name makes a man capable of purifying even the pious. The semblance of the name protects one from all disease. All worries are subdued by even a semblance of the holy name. One who chants the semblance of the name is free from all fear and distress. Demons, ghosts, goblins, and witches, wicked creatures of all sorts, are kept at bay by the influence of Namabhas, as are all other obstacles. Even if one has fallen into hell, he still attains liberation easily, for even one's old karma is destroyed by the semblance of the holy name. Namabhasa is greater than the Vedas, greater than all places of pilgrimage, as such is superior to any kind of pious activity. The shadow of the holy name takes one to Vaikuntha. Namabhasa gives the chanter dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. It is all-powerful and has the power to deliver the conditioned souls. It gives joy to all the world and raises one to the supreme state, giving the supreme state to even one who is without refuge. Namabhas takes one to spiritual border by Kunta, especially in Kali Yuga, to get all the scriptures. So it's just a little bit of a problem that our goal is not by Kunta, and our goal is not relief from distress, it's Krishna Prem. But just seeing that, it's not a negative thing, full of side benefits that are very powerful. Any last comments or thoughts?
But doesn't it read more like it, like the Shruti false Mataji that maybe says, don't have disease, don't have this, don't have that?
Yeah. It's not an exaggeration, it's a reality. Because we're looking at Nam is all powerful, all merciful. So, Namabhas is that dim manifestation of him. So it's going to be very powerful, even though it's just a dim manifestation of his potency and mercy.
Does this hearing all this encourage us to at least aspire to come at this stage?
Yes. Or get out of the rut, get out of the Namaparad rut.
Or is it like we should only aspire to chant?
Yeah, but you can't go from aparad to pure. You have to prama, there are steps. Right? So I'm just wanting you to be aware of what you're dealing with.
Because generally we don't think of nam abhas, we don't give you could have started with that, we don't understand it. That's
right.
Why we don't.
Right.
Put a lot of emphasis on the Namabhas. You just think that it's just maybe...
Well, I do put a lot of emphasis on it, but I don't do it directly. I'm always telling you, be very careful what you do with your mouth. I'm always telling you, your relationship with Nam is very important. These are essential aspects of getting out of the rut of Namaparad and coming to at least Namabhas. Just catch the essence of it. main thing is just be very careful with the mouth. A mouth, you know, we have one mouth, not two mouths. If we had one mouth where we could, you know, eat anything and say anything, and another mouth we could, you know, chat with, no problem.
Even then, better to empty his box.
Nice. But we only have one. So then we have to be careful how we use it. It's a door to Krishna Prem. It's a door to Krishna Prem.
And when, Madhati, we will have the strong conviction on the statement actually?
You practice it in experience. And you associate with those who have it. Have that conviction. You know, realize conviction. Associate with that.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna. Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare
what's going to influence you practically most from this session.
Let me ask Sevan Mukhe.
Okay, and then?
Sevan Mukhe and Yidhara. To chant Madhati more carefully and attentively, I should endeavor it every day, Madhati.
Okay.
To wash the tongue, Sevan
Mukhe. Okay.
Be very conscious about what our tongue actually.
Okay.
Eating and smoking and using it.